last week on Purim. But yeah, we did not a class on Purim. But we did 2 weeks ago, so hopefully we can pick up from there. Our learning today is dedicated anonymously in memory of Chaya Bas Yenta V'Yitzchak, Helen Strassler, Zichrona Levracha, a woman of gentle grace. So her neshama shav and aliyah should benefit from the tzedaka and the learning that we're going to do in the next hour. We are in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25. The death of Shmuel is what we started with last time, and we're going to conclude that discussion and then move on from there to meet Naval and Abigail. Okay? Everyone's clear on the game plan. So, last time, we introduced the note, first of all, by discussing, you know, the issue of when Shmuel died and how old Shmuel was. I'm not going into that discussion again now. We noted that Shmuel's death is going to resurface, God willing, in chapter 28, sentence 3. Well, we know it's going to come up in chapter 28, sentence 3. We noted also the language about his burial in his house in Ramah. We said that's not literal. He's not actually being buried in his house in Ramah. It means the area where he lived. And we asked the question, which we want to continue on now, of why his death is mentioned here. Why is this here? Remember that at the end of chapter 24, right, the end of Parakaf Dalid, we were told that David and Shaul met after David spared Shaul's life, and Shaul acknowledged that David is going to become the Melech, he's going to become the king, and he asked him, please don't destroy my household after me, and David swore that he wouldn't do that. And then we get the death of Shmuel, and then we move on to the story of David and Naval and Abigail. So why are we mentioning Shmuel's death right here? The simple answer, the first answer, Radak's answer, this is when he died. That's when it happened. And he actually said, having Shmuel die after Shaul acknowledges David's throne, that David is going to be king, is a fulfillment of Shmuel's nevuah, Shmuel's prophecy. So it's essentially a validation of his career. And that was one approach. Second approach is that it is meant to introduce the story of Naval by showing why David went to Midbar Paran, why David moved south. Remember, David stayed in the Hebron region all along. Why did he move to Midbar Paran, which we said is down in the area of Egypt? So we brought at the time the idea of Rabbi Yosef ibn Kaspi, who suggested that David had only stayed local in order to be able to consult with Shmuel. Shmuel's gone, so David moves. We thought that was odd, because we haven't seen any consultation at all, just that one time when he went to Shmuel for safety, back in chapter 19. Alternatively, though, David moves to Paran, because now he has an increased fear of Shaul, for three reasons. As I put, all of this is on the table, on the source sheet. Right? Whether because the mourners are going to travel along the area where David has been by Ein Gedi, by the Yam HaMelech, the Dead Sea. They're traveling that route to go to Ramah to mourn Shmuel. Or because Shmuel hadn't told anyone about anointing David, but now people are going to find out and David is afraid that Shaul will attack him. Or because David wasn't as afraid of Shaul while Shmuel lived. He thought that that would be a check on Shaul, and that is now gone, and so now he needs to go far away. All of those are ideas that we floated last time. But now I want to start with a new idea, still within the idea that this introduces the story of Naval. And that is, this is meant to show us the character of Naval. I'm just going to silence everybody because I'm getting background noise, and we're not doing questions and comments yet. It's probably better that way. It's meant to show us what Naval is like. And this is something which Abarbanel picks up on. There are Midrashim that pick up on it. And they come from different directions. So the first comment that I would bring you from Abarbanel, I did not bring it on the sheet, but it's in the table, is Shmuel, as we're going to see here, Ruth, I see your message in the chat. Just log out and log back in. Often that can fix things like that. That's what I would suggest. When we see here that Shmuel is buried with great honors, we're going to see in the story that Naval is going to die, and there will be no honor at all for Naval. And so Abarbanel suggests it's meant to show the difference between Shmuel and Naval. Shmuel is great, and Naval isn't getting any honor when he passes away. You know what? I just realized with the problem that Ruth is having, she's not going to have heard my advice. Hang on one second. I'm just going to write it in the chat.
He might have already gone.
You know what? Yeah, she didn't catch it. All right, I'm sorry. In any case, that's Abarbanel's approach to it, at least his first approach to it. A second approach to this, the idea that we're showing Naval's character, is seen in a series of midrashim. It's in Midrash Shmuel, it's in Koheles Rabba, it's in Avos Dravi Nasan. Take a look at source number one, where I brought it from Midrash Shmuel. Vayamas Shmuel, and Shmuel died. Ein Dvarim Amurin Ela Le'inyano Shel Naval. This is said only as it relates to the story of Naval next. Shenemar, Vayoma Shmuel, etc. V'samach Lev, Ish B'Ma'on, Maseo B'Karmel. It tells us Shmuel died, and then right away there's a man in Ma'on, and his business is in Carmel, and so on. That's Naval. So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, HaKol Sovtin V'Tovchin Alibo Al Misaso Shel Tzadik. Everybody is grieving the death of this righteous person, the death of Shmuel. V'harasha Hazeh Yosheva Ba'oseh Marzachim. And this wicked person is making parties. Meaning, as you're going to see, when they harvested, they made a big celebration. There was lots of food around. It was a Yom Tov. How dare he engage in that kind of a celebration when Shmuel has just died? That's the idea. It's sort of reminiscent, actually, for those in my Malachim Shir, to David being very ill, right? And Adoniyahu making his big party. So this is what we're meant to see here is Naval's character. And Abarbanel is very strong on this. He's basing himself on a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Hei, when he says, if you take a look at source 2, Vayala goes as eight, so no, he ascended to the shearers of his sheep, b'simcha v'gil, with happiness and joy, v'lo hisabel al adam kasher, and he did not grieve for a good man, Velachain ne'enash umes, and therefore he was punished and he died, as we're going to see within the story. So Abarbanel is not making up that idea that death would be the result of not grieving properly. That's the Gemara in Shabbos. It's actually a theme in the Gemara in a few different places that insufficient grief and eulogizing is grounds for punishment. It's very important that people mourn for those who have done good things in this world. So that's another way to understand the presentation here, the mention here, is because it actually shows us very much, it shows us what Naval was like. It shows us his character. Last approach, and then I'll take questions and comments, but the last approach here comes from Rabbi Yosef Kara. It's quoted in the Dat Mikra edition. He says, it's showing why David does what he does in this chapter. Because you're going to see something very strange. David is going to ask Naval for help. Naval is going to refuse to help him. And David is going to go on the march, prepared to attack and apparently kill Naval. It's a strong escalation. Why does David do that? So we're going to talk about that later, but Rabbi Yosef Kara suggests it's because Shmuel is no longer alive. In other words, he believes that this was actually inappropriate of David, and he did it because he didn't have Shmuel to keep him in line. It's an interesting idea, certainly. So we have a bunch of different ideas for why Shmuel's death is mentioned right here. Could be this is just when he died. Could be it teaches us why David goes to Midbar Paran whether it's because Shmuel is dead or whether because he's afraid of Shaul, it shows us Nabal's character. He's celebrating right now, or the lack of any honors for him, for Nabal, or it's showing why David does what he does with Nabal, because he no longer has Shmuel to keep him in line. Okay, Susan.
The thing that I'm troubled about, maybe it's mentioned later, so then I'll understand, but Shaul's reaction is very important, I would think, to Shmuel's dying. And nothing's mentioned, I mean, we hear about all the people mourning, but this must have driven Shaul really scared or crazy. And nothing's said about it, and I don't know, maybe it's repeated later.
Yeah.
But isn't his reaction important?
So I think you're right in both your question and your answer. I think you are correct that this presumably has a dramatic effect on Shaul. And the answer is you will see the dramatic effect in Parakhav Ches in chapter 28 where it's going to reiterate Shmuel's death. So that's where we're going to see Shaul's reaction. So okay. We will see it. Yes, Sandra.
The word Nabal has bad connotations.
We're coming to that. We're getting there.
Oh.
Yeah, we're not introducing Nabal. We're not introducing him yet. It's coming next.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. Ricky.
Where in the text are you? I'm kind of lost.
We just did chapter 25, sentence 1.
Yeah, where does it say that Nabal celebrated?
So that's what's coming next when we see the shearing of the sheep. You'll see.
Well, it was Nabal ever mentioned before? Or is
no. No, he's new to us. He's
Do
new
we
to
know
us.
Why? Are we going to find out?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Good? Okay, so let's move into... Actually, not quite yet move into the story. There's one other piece that I wanted to make sure to highlight here. Do you remember chapter 8? I realize that, you know, not everybody here was with us when we did chapter 8. But the Jews wanted a king back in Parakhes, back in chapter 8. And they came to Shmuel and said, we want somebody who is going to be our king. They didn't want they didn't want Shmuel as the Shofet to be their leader anymore. And Shmuel was very angry, right? And Hashem said to Shmuel, no, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. And we felt, and the commentators highlighted, that they had really prematurely dropped Shmuel, rejecting him and his decades of service. It was really the ultimate insult. And we talked a lot about that in chapter 8, all the way through chapter 12, when Shmuel did his final public lecture or speech. But here, look at the description of the mourning that they do on behalf of Shmuel. Vayikavtzu kol Yisrael in chapter 25, sentence 1, right? All Israel gathered. Vayispedulo, they eulogized him. Vayikberuhu b'veiso b'rama, they buried him in Rama, as we've talked about. And then, if you jump ahead to chapter 28, sentence 3, where we again have the reference to Shmuel's death, it'll say, Shmuel meis, Shmuel died. Vayispedulo kol Yisrael, all Israel eulogized him. Vayikberuhu b'rama u'v'iro, they buried him in Rama and in his city. Right? So, again, you see this great grief from the entire nation. And the Medrash picks up on an odd turn of phrase in 28:3, when it says, Vayikberuhu barama uve'iro. They buried him in Rama and in his city. What does that mean? Rama is his city. So take a look, please, on your sheet at source number 3, the Medrash in Avos D'Rabbi Nasan. Let's say you're going to read it as in Rama, which is his city. I already know his city was Rama. We've been told his city was Rama many, many times. Elisha, you call Yisrael maspidim lo bechol makom, kederech shemaspidim lo beiro. Means that he was eulogized everywhere in the same way that they eulogized him in Rama. They eulogized him in Rama, and each one eulogized them in his own city. That's the type of send-off that he gets. There are actually commentators who float the idea. We're told regarding Yehoshua that they did not grieve Yehoshua properly. So they suggest now this time the Jews learned from that. But this is really, really powerful to me. I see hands. Please don't put hands up until we're ready for questions and comments. I think I said this once before a couple of weeks ago, but I don't want people to get their heads into question mode and then miss what we're saying. So let's first cover this and then questions and comments. Take a look at source number 4, please. The Medrash in Koheles Rabbah, which really highlights what this means for Shmuel. Nolad Adam ve'ein simechen lo. A person is born, they don't rejoice. Of course, people are happy when a baby is born. That's not what he's saying. But it means we don't know who this is going to be. Maybe this person is going to grow up to be a horrible human being. She'ein yodin be'ez eperek u'masim ya'amod. Who knows what this person is going to be like, what opportunities the person is going to have, what deeds they're going to perform. Im tzadik v'im rasha, righteous or wicked, im tov v'im ra, good, bad. Umeis, when a person dies, heim tzrichin l'smach, sh'nipter b'shem tov, v'yatzim in ha'olam b'shalom. When he dies, that's when they should rejoice, because the person has left the world with a good reputation, and has left the world in peace. In other words, if a person had a great life, now is the time to rejoice for the life they had. And of course, again, that's not human nature. We're sad and upset because that's all we got and we're not getting further. Understood. But he's saying that's the point to celebrate. And look at the application. Nolad Shmuel v'lo hirgisha bobria. When Shmuel was born, nobody knew. Ukshemeis hirgishu akol, he died, everybody knew. Shnamar, like it says, he died and they all eulogized him everywhere. Amar b'Shmuel bar Nachman, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman said, Mishalo nasnulo. They gave him back that which was his own. What do you mean? Remember we talked about how he was a circuit judge. He traveled place to place to place to judge people's cases. V'alach mide shana b'shana v'sivei Beit El. He went annually, made a circuit to Beit El. The point being that he traveled everywhere for them, and therefore what he received back was what he had invested. That's the idea. But what I want to highlight here, the Medrash here isn't really talking about Shmuel. The Medrash here is talking about human beings on the whole. But I would apply it very much to Shmuel, because he is born to Chana, who was downtrodden at the beginning, right? Penina, her rival wife of Elkanah, was mocking her and degrading her for the fact that she didn't have a child. She's crying at the Mishkan, and Eli says, stop rambling in your drunkenness, right? I mean, she was so low in the beginning of this sefer, in the beginning of this book, and then she produces a son who goes on to be grieved by all Israel. I'll go one step further for the French speakers here. I know who you are. This is Chana's denouement. How's that for a pronunciation? It really is. If you think about the song that she sang after Shmuel was born, right? You remember that song that she sang? It was in the beginning of Perek Beis, the beginning of chapter 2. And she talked about how the low are elevated and made great. Right? Those who had been indigent, those who had no standing, those are the ones who now become a star. Mekim e'afar dal. That is Shmuel. Right? Starting from this low point and becoming the one who all Israel mourns. It's really, I think it's a powerful moment in the arc of the Sefer. Interesting last note within that. Take a look at source number 5. We say in that opening sentence of the chapter that everybody is grieving for Shmuel, and then it says, David got up and he went down to Midbar Paran. So the Medrash says, only after the grief. Aval David Mahu Omer. This Medrash is a follow-up on source number 1, where it said that Naval did not grieve. But what about David? What did David say? Hareg o neharag, I will kill or be killed. Rodef or nirdaf, I will pursue or be pursued. No matter what happens to me for showing up with everybody else at Shmuel's funeral, I'm going. Halech ani va'oseh gemilos chesed letzadik. I'm going to go perform kindness for that tzadik, for Shmuel. Hadav dechsev, as the pasuk in Tehillim says, v'ani v'chatzecha batachti, God, I trust in your kindness. Lamdecha shekala kofer begilas chasadim kekofer be'ikar. Teaching that anyone who denies someone's kindness is as though he denies the essence. It's as though he's denying God. I'm not quite clear on the end of that medrash. I wonder, there are a few different ways you could read it. But the point that I'm drawing, that I'm drawing your attention to, is the idea that David first participates in the grieving. Then he goes down to Paran. Even though it's dangerous for him to be with everybody else. Shmuel is buried with great honor. Regardless of how, what his beginnings were, regardless of the fact that he was replaced as the shofet, everybody recognizes Shmuel and they mourn when he passes on. Now, yeah, you could always say it would be nice if they treated him that way when he was alive, but nonetheless, take what you can get, right? Okay, questions and comments before we get to Naval. Yes, Claudette.
When they say all Israel at that point, are they talking about Judah and Israel, or are they only talking about the area Israel?
Right. It's a good question. I believe in this case it means everybody, Judah and Israel. It's very hard to tell sometimes which one it means. You're right for asking the question, but I think that's the sense of it here. Yeah. Okay. Other questions and comments? Yes, Eti.
I think that Judah and Israel were still united. They weren't divided yet at this time.
That's true and not true at the same time. There were no official split kingdoms. They're under the same authority. However, we've already noted quite a bit, going back to Shoftim, that they functioned separately. When there were military censuses, this many soldiers from Yehuda, this many soldiers from Yisrael. Shaul was backed by Yisrael. Yehuda tended to be with David, although we did see Yehuda, you know, people from Yehuda betray David from time to time. But yes, we definitely have the sense that they have a different identity from each other, even just the land. You know, Yehuda is that whole south, and Yisrael is everything north of there. Granted, Shimon is in Yehuda, we've discussed that a couple of times. But no, there were separate identities in certain ways, but here I believe that when it says Yisrael, it means everyone. Yes, Hannah. You have to unmute.
I'm speaking. Doesn't have to do with what you're doing now, but I was always wondering why it says Tehillim, Betis and Mitzrayim, then Bet Yaakov, Me'avloif, Yehuda, and Bet Yaakov.
Haita Yudala Kodjo, Yisil Mam
Shalotav. Even then, I always think why.
Yeah.
But
it's true. They really were separate.
Yeah.
Very true. I think I gave a shiur about that once when I talked about that parak in Tehillim. I don't remember what I said then. Okay. So, let's meet Naval and let's meet Abigail. I'd much rather meet Abigail than meet Naval, but Naval is kind of important to the story too. So what we're going to see in the introduction of Naval here is this man has the reason to help David, and he has the means to help David, but because he is, as he is named, Naval, and we're going to talk a lot about the name Naval, that's why I cut off the question before, because we have a lot to say about it, despite having the reason and the means, he's going to refuse to help, angering David. So let's take a look at the opening two sentences. It's Pasuk Bez, Pasuk Gimel. V'ish b'ma'on u'ma'aseyu v'karmel. There was a man who lived in Ma'on. His business were in the Carmel. When we say the Carmel here, important to understand that generally speaking, it's understood to mean an agricultural. We're not thinking the place up near Haifa. That's not what we mean when we say Carmel here. That's Radak comments that, and that makes perfect sense because David is in Midbar Paran. He'd be very far away from Carmel. So it really wouldn't make sense. Either it's a town named Carmel, or it was just an agricultural area. Either way. He's from Ma'on. V'ha'ish gadol ma'od. He is great. Great not as a good person, but great as a person of wealth. V'lod son shloshet alafim ve'elef izim. He has great standing in the community. He is a wealthy man. And he has 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, which I would tend to consider a lot, not being somebody who has one. I just kind of assume. Vayihi bigzozes sono ba'Carmel, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. V'shem ha'ish Naval. V'shem ishto Abigail. His name was Naval. Her name was Abigail. Notice that we lead with his wealth, right, and follow with his name. V'ha'isha tova sechel v'fas toar. She was someone of great intellect, as well as being attractive. V'ha'ish, and the man, kashe, he was a rough man. V'ram ma'alalim, and he did bad things. V'hu chalibi. We're going to come back to that word chalibi. I'm not translating it right now. Okay, what do we know? Well, number one, as I said to you, we talk about his means and where he is, which is going to associate him with David, before we get to the names, because this is really the underpinning of the entire story. Number one, he's related to David. When we take Chalibi, as we're going to see, that's going to be, according to Radak, a descendant of Kalev from Yehuda. I should note, there are two Kalevs of great reputation in Yehuda. There's the one who is the spy, the Meragel, Kalev ben Yefuneh, and then there's Kalev ben Chetzron. The one we're talking about here is Kalev ben Chetzron, and we'll see that in the Gemara in a little bit. Either way, he's from Yehuda. If I take Chalibi to mean descendant of Kalev, we are going to come back to other meanings of that name. But also, Radak notes, he lives in Ma'on. Ma'on is a city in Yehuda. So this is somebody who should be loyal to David. That's what we're trying to say. And in fact, Malbim says that's why David turns to him for help. Even though we have seen that Keilah and Zif were also of Yehuda, and they didn't help. Just the opposite. They may have made things worse. Nonetheless, David thinks Yehuda is going to help. So number one, he should be helping David because he's family. Number two, he knows of David because David is nearby. He's in Ma'on. Go back to chapter 23, please. Sentence 24. Chapter 23, sentence 24. David was in Midbar Zif. Shaul is coming to Midbar Zif to get David. What happens? David va'anashav b'midbar Ma'on ba'arava. David and his men were in the wilderness of Ma'on in the Arava, and Shaul goes looking for him, and it continues, v'yeshu b'midbar Ma'on. David was in Ma'on. He's right nearby. I should know Ralbag has a different take on Ma'on. It's going to confuse people. But he says, no, Ma'on means an upper-class area, meaning he lives in a nice neighborhood, and his work is off in the agricultural area. He's distant from it. Okay. In any case, I like Malbim's read. It makes a lot of sense that he is nearby. So what we know right now is that Naval has means. He's a man of wealth, and he has reason to help David. He knows David. David is nearby, their family, and being from Yehuda. And then we find out Nabal's name and his character. And here you have to ask yourself, isn't this name a little on the nose? Naval, right? Naval does mean, somebody who is repellent. Right? In Parashat Ha'azinu, Devarim chapter 32, sentence 6, the Jews are rebuked as Am Naval Velo Chacham. It's not a compliment. It means somebody of poor character, a criminal, as a matter of fact. If you take a look in chapter 25, where we are, sentence 25, Abigail is actually going to say to David about Nabal, Kishmo Kein Hu. Right? If you ever heard that popular phrase in Hebrew, that comes from Abigail. She pioneered a couple of popular phrases. So one of them is Kishmo Kein Hu. He is just like his name. So the question you have to ask is, what in the world were his parents thinking when they named him? Right? You name your kid Nabal. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't do that. I think. So those of you who learned Megillas Rus with me last year may remember that some of the commentators there, when we talked about the names Machlon and Kilion, right, illness and destruction, suggested there were other ways to explain those names. There are other possible meanings for it. Machlon is easier to do than Kilion. But maybe it had there was some event that took place that it was associated with. Maybe come up with something. In the Dot Mikra edition, Professor Keel floats the idea that it's related to the Arabic Nabil. Nabil being noble. So, maybe. Maybe it is. It's certainly hard to understand why you name your kid Nabal. Radak quotes his father saying that his parents didn't name him Nabal at all. This was a nickname. He earned it. Take a look at source number 7, please. Look at Radak. V'kasav Adoni Avizal. My father said, Ki Nabal zeloya shimo shekaru lo avosav. This wasn't the name that his ancestors gave him. Ella may rov grius hayukorin oso b'nei adam Nabal. He was such a bad person that people called him a Nabal. That's the idea. So he's a bad, bad man. Kalibi, right? We said he was Kalibi, the last word in sentence 3. So I already told you that one view is that that means he's from Kalev, part of David's family. And we're going to see that more in a Yerushalmi below, which is fascinating. Can't wait for that Yerushalmi. Radak, though, says, if you look carefully at the word, you'll notice something. There's a kri and a ktiv. It is read kalibi, but it is written like it has a vav on the end. Kilibo, like his heart. Says Radak, what that means is his deeds betrayed what was in his heart. When you looked at him, when you saw the way he acted, that was what was going on inside. Radak actually says that can even fit with Kalibi. People would come away saying, yep, he's like I thought he was. It's like what I thought in my heart. That's what he is. So that's a different take on Kalibi, taking it as betraying his character. And of course, when you read this, you have to think of what Radak says and what Ralbag says, which is Kalibi. He's like a dog. Right? Isn't that your first inclination when you read it? Take a look at Ralbag. Ralbag really goes to town on this. He says, Shalarov achzari yuso. Because of his great cruelty, hayatchunaso bitchunas hakelavim. His traits were dog-like. What does that mean? You ever see two dogs meet? Shesonim b'nei minam. They hate their own species. V'yinavchulam. They bark. B'vavam etzlam. When they draw near. V'lo yanichun le'achom enim tzababayis. They don't let them eat whatever is found in the house. V'avapisha lo yigwami ma'achalam davar. Even if it's not going to cost them anything. Dogs are very protective of their own turf. They do not give to anything. That's what he says. Mind you, I don't have a dog, never had a dog, don't know anything about them. Don't tell me your story about a dog that wasn't like this. That was Rabbi's experience of dogs. That's for sure. Worth noting also, because we discussed this in the previous parak, do you remember in chapter 24, sentence 14, where David said to Shaul, you're running after me like after a dead dog? Right? So we talked about what dog means in Shmuel and in Malachim, and I gave you the references in source number 9 here. We had it with Goliath saying to David, am I a dog that you come after me with the makel, with a stick? The, you know, we had Avner, where I mentioned Avner, who's in Shmuel Beis, who says to Ishbosheth, when Ishbosheth insults him, he says to him, you know, I'd be, by the head of the dogs of Yehuda. Mephibosheth, son of Yehonatan, when David goes to support him, says, who am I? I'm just a dog. I'm insignificant. Avishai says that about Shimi ben Gera, later on, that he's like a dog. The, you know, dogs are generally speaking not a positive image. It's something low class, something of no significance. And frankly, that even fits with a pasuk, which I thought I brought on here, but I see I did not. You know, in the Torah, in Parshas Mishpatim, it's Shmos Chaf Beis Lamed 22:30. For anyone who's going to want to look it up, we are told Va'anshe Kodesh Tihyun Li, you should be holy to me. Uvasar Basadet Terefa Lo Sochelu, don't eat meat that you find that was torn up, right? A carcass. If you see an animal carcass, don't eat that. Lakelev Tashlichuno So, throw it to the dog. So there are all sorts of nice ideas there where we're rewarding the dog. The dog didn't bark in Egypt when we were leaving, and those are all very nice ideas. But the simple read of the text is, you should be Anshei Kodesh. You should be holy people, so you don't eat it. Instead, give it to the dog, which is not holy. That's the idea. That's the contrast. So the idea of saying that Naval is Kalibi may be a statement of this is who he is. He is dog-like. As opposed to Avigayo. And then I'll pause for questions. Avigayo, look at Abarbanel in source number 10. Vishem Ishto Avigayo wrote Salomar Av Hasimcha Vehagil, meaning the source of happiness and joy. Av could mean source. Av could mean the greatest of. Also, I'm not sure in which case, which way to take it here. V'hora ze al tuv mizga utchunasa. It showed her good disposition and her good character. Interesting note. We've seen other cases involving a wife who was better than the husband. Can you think of any? Pairs in Tanakh where the wife is better than the husband. Yeah, Alina.
Shimshon's parents.
Right. Hatzlal Ponit and Manoach, right? It wasn't as dramatic and extreme as the way they're presenting it here. It wasn't even as explicit where you come out and actually label. The other one I think of is, in the Medrash, On ben Pelet and his wife, right? He wants to go with Korach and his wife keeps him out of trouble. That was the other one.
What about Devorah?
I'm sorry?
What about Devorah?
Well, with Devorah, we don't even know if she's married. You mean if she's married to Barak?
Yeah.
Right. If you take the view that Devorah is married to Barak, then yes, I would add that to the list. That's a good one. Thank you.
What about Tamar and Yehuda?
Tamar and Yehuda is interesting in the sense that they're not husband and wife when that happens, and he isn't with her afterwards. But in terms of a pair of a man and woman who produce children, yes, Sadka Mimeni, she is greater than me. So I think you could do that, which is also very interesting because their relationship is what leads to this family. It's what leads to exactly what we're talking about here, to Chetzron and to Naval. More about that coming up shortly in source number 11. So it's an interesting connection there. So we have a nice collection here of husbands and wives where the wife is better than the husband. None of them are as extreme as this one though. This one takes the cake. Questions and comments about Naval and Abigail before I bring you one more source that I think is just fascinating. Yes, Ricky.
So which meaning for Kelibo, Kalibo, Kalev, Kelev is it?
Yes. No, that's my answer. The answer is yes. I think... You know, something I've said off and on bears repeating here. When you look at something in a pasuk, you're not just asking what is the factual information conveyed, but how did the Navi choose to convey it? Example, back in Perek Tet, chapter 9, we were introduced to Shaul. And it said, we were introduced in chapter 13. But in chapter 13, we were told, Ben Shana Shaul Bimolcho, which literally sounds like he's a year old when he becomes king, which is nonsense. He's out looking for the donkeys before that. So what does that mean? He's a year old when he becomes king. Two different approaches in the commentators. The simple approach, it means he had gone 1 year into his reign when the following thing happened. Right? That's the easy, simple, straightforward read. However, says the Medrash, he was as innocent as a one-year-old. Now, the Medrash is not telling me, don't read this as in the first year of his reign, it means he's as innocent as a one-year-old. What it's telling me is, the Navi chooses the wording, which is going to give you multiple layers of meaning, in order to tell me it's not only Shaul's first year, this is when Shaul is innocent. What you're seeing here, Shaul is still righteous Shaul at this point. So when I look at this, I say to myself, you could have just said, if you wanted to just say he's a descendant of Kalev, you could have said, V'hu ben Kalev, or you could have given us the full lineage, because he's not directly, he's got to be son of, son of, son of. Right? There are generations in between, and we don't know who they are. The fact that you chose not to do that, but to say he is Kalev, which sure sounds like dog-like, means that you're trying to teach me an additional lesson here. You follow?
So the additional lessons are that he was like a dog, or that he was, versus also the spelling, the Kalev, you say Kalev, but it's written Kalevo. So is this what the writer wanted you to think? Because it's not really deep, it's really textual, it's really...
Yeah, but I think yes. I think this is meant to convey multiple messages. That's the way I would read it.
But yeah. Not deep. It's not in depth.
I see that as deep. I'm good with it being deep. Claudette and then Ethi.
Question. How wealthy was David's family? And in this particular, in the verses, they draw attention to Nabal's wealth. One would think that David is acquiring wealth through the women he becomes involved.
So David isn't fighting any wars right now.
No, wealth.
Right, but he's not, where's he getting wealth from?
Well, if he becomes Abigail.
Oh, when he marries Abigail.
Right, her husband was a wealthy man when he died. So you want to know if he's acquiring wealth through the women that he has.
Oh, that was what you were saying. Okay. So, a few thoughts. First of all, David is broke. And that's going to become very clear in this chapter. They got nothing. That's number one. Number two, you mentioned David's family. I wondered, as I was learning this, whether this isn't one of the reasons why we saw a Medrash that said that David left his family with the king of Moab, and the Medrash said that the king of Moab then killed him. And we gave a few different reasons for thinking that. I feel like one of the reasons for thinking it is the fact that they're not here, and David is starving, and he doesn't turn to them. So I wonder if that supports the idea that they're actually gone. The fact that he has to do this. Maybe it's part of the evidence. But in terms of whether he gets wealth from Abigail, Abigail is going to come to him in this chapter and bring him a lot of stuff while her husband is still alive. Does she inherit from her husband? From a pure halachic perspective, the answer is no. Right? The children inherit. What happens with those children? Are there children? We don't have enough information to know. Yeah. Ethi.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have two comments. First of all, when you mentioned about dogs being bad and whatever, there is in Arabic a very big insult that says you are a son of a dog.
Yeah, that's in English too.
No, not really.
Yeah. Okay, and the other?
Sorry?
And the other comment?
The other comment is about Nabal. In Hebrew, there is, if somebody is really bad and does bad deeds, they call him a menuval.
Yes.
So I assume it's coming from there, right?
Generally assumed to be so, yes. Yeah. I mean, there is a term, nivul, nun yud, vav, vav, lamed, and minuval like that also. There is such a term, and there are ways to associate it. But, I think minuval tends to be like this one. I think so, offhand. Yes, Ricky?
Doesn't the vowel come from nivela?
So they're associated, likely, yes. They are likely associated.
Nevela means a dead person.
A dead body. It doesn't mean a person, per se.
Corpse, yeah. Sorry?
Yeah.
Corpse.
But it's a dead... Yes, a corpse, correct. I'm just looking, since I have my Bar Ilan here. Yeah, actually, I am seeing I'm seeing Menuval used with the Vav. Memnud Vav Vav Lamed. Very interesting. So the answer is not necessarily, although the pasuk they quote in Micha Zayin is actually with a base. I don't know. Interesting. Okay, the bottom line is that no, Menuval can be the Vav Vav. But I wanted to comment on something else that you had just noted. Yes. I recently gave a shiur on Shmuel Beis. In Perek Gimel, chapter 3 in Shmuel Bet, and there David talks about how Avner was killed and he died like a Naval. So there one of the commentators suggests that Naval is like no fail, the one who fell. Mixing the vet and the pay. There's a lot to be done with this for sure. All right, I want to show you one more source.
One more thing?
Yeah.
Could it be that his parents did give him this name and it's the derivative of Nevel Bekinor?
So that was actually in my notes. I forgot to mention it. Thank you for bringing me back to my notes from before. I skipped a line. I had the suggestion there that it could be like Nevel Bekinor, it's a musical instrument, or I suggested like a Nevel Yayin. A jug of wine. So maybe that. Yeah, it could be it was something else. Thank you for calling me back to that in the notes. I completely skipped it. Okay. One more take on the entire story. Based on the idea that Naval is from Kalev ben Chetzron. Look at this Yerushalmi in source number 11. Shlosha banim hayu lechetzron. Chetzron has three sons. Dichsiv, it's in Divrei Hayamim. Those of you who have a full Tanakh and want to open it up, you could certainly do that. I'm going to open up mine here. Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Bet, chapter 2. It's this opening, genealogy segment, and specifically sentence 9 is what you want. Hang on. Okay, there it is. So, you're getting the lineage of Yehuda, right? Those who are in my shir for Malachim will recognize sentence 6, which talks about the sons of Zerach. So Zimri, Eitan, Haman, Kalkol, Dara. We talked about Shlomo when we said that his wisdom was greater than Eitan, Haman, Kalkol, and Darda. That was linked to those. So Chetzron is the son of Peretz, right? Going back to the point that was made, I think it was Sandra who made it about Yehuda and Tamar. So they have two sons, Peretz and Zerach, and Peretz has Chetzron and Chamul. Chetzron has the following sons. Uvnei Chetzron asher nolad lo, the sons of Chetzron born to him, est Yerach Me'el, v'est Ram, V'es Kluvai. Yerach Me'el, Ram, and Kluvai are the three names. Got it? So now go back into this Yerushalmi. Hu Yerach Me'el Kadmoi. Yerach Me'el. I actually wrote it wrong in the English. I wrote Yerach Me'el. It's kind of instinct. But it's Yerach Me'el. In any case, he is the firstborn. He's the oldest. Ela shenasa isha goya lehis aterba. But he married a non-Jewish woman as an ornament for him. Dichsiv, because in the same chapter it says, Vatihi isha acheret liyirach me'el. Yirach me'el had another woman, Ushma Atara. Her name was Atara, a crown, an ornament. And it continues to say, he aim onam. She was the mother of onam. Onam, like onain, to grieve. Sheikh Nisa anina lesoch beiso. She brought grief into his house. The point of the Yerushalmi is to say, Yirach Me'el becomes discounted. His line can't be the great line of Yehuda. He married out. Viram, then we go to the line of Ram. And we know what happens with Ram. This is from Rus, right? Ram holides Aminadav, Aminadav holides Nachshon, dot, 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 Nachshon holides Salma, Salmon holides Boaz. Right? You know the generations. So Ram's line goes all the way down to Boaz. Boaz nesayas Rus. And Boaz marries Ruth. Which we look at and say, yeah, that's great. However, some criticized it and said, she's a Moabite. You're not supposed to marry a Moabite. You've disqualified your lineage. Hanaval asa min de kluvai. But Naval, he came from Kluvai. And Amar Naval, Naval said, Les be Israel bar tavin sagin mi Israel. There is no one with greater lineage than me. I'm it. I'm going to be the royal line. Hadau dichsiv v'ish v'ma'on maseu b'karmel v'ish gadol me'ov v'hu kluvai. So the pasuk says, he was in Ma'on, his deeds, his business were, it was in, Carmel. And he was very great, and he was Kluvai, the Asimin Kluvai. He came from Kluvai. The point being, for us, that, and this is what the Karban Ha'eda explains in source number 12, Nabal thinks he's the next king. Not David. Take a look at source number 12 of David Frankel in the Karban Ha'eda. He says, Amar Naval, Ein b'Yisrael ben tovim mimeni. There is no one better than me. Shehu mishevet Yehuda ashalom mishpat hamalchus. Because he was from the tribe of Yehuda, which is supposed to get the throne. Uv mishpachto ein bashum pigam. And he had no flaw in his family. Lachei lo chashash ledivrei David. You want to know why he won't help David? The answer is not just ugliness, which is what it sounded like until now. He's the dog who barks at the other dogs. But rather, it's because of power. He disdains David. You upstart, you come from Ruth. Right? We've talked about that before. How people said that David's lineage was illegitimate because it came from Ruth. So add Nabal to the mix of people who did this, right? Doeg did that also with David, saying that it's that he's disqualified because Boaz married Ruth. So to sum up this section, Nabal has every reason to help David. He has the means, their family, he's nearby, but we're told of his rotten character. And potentially his reason to see David as a rival. But Abigail, she's wonderful. That's what we have. Got it? Good? Okay, we still have 6 minutes, so we can go a little further. Let's see what happens. David is going to send his men for support from Nabal. Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4. Vayishma David Bamidbar. David heard in the Midbar, Midbar Paran, ki gozeis Nabal est sono, that Nabal is shearing his sheep. Vayishlach David asarane arim. David sent 10 youths. Vayomer David lane arim. And David says to the youths, alu Carmela, go up to the Carmel, uvasem el Nabal, and come to Nabal. He's in Carmel now, he's not in Ma'on, he's there for the shearing. Ushelten lo vishmi l'shalom. And ask from me how he is. It's a formal request after his health. Va'amartem ko lechai, which is actually a line that comes up in a song. Va'amartem ko lechai. I think it's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, no? We'll have to see what those words mean. I'm not translating them right now, but it's a bracha. It's a blessing. Ve'ata shalom, you should have peace. Uveischa shalom, your house should have peace. V'chol asher lecha shalom, all that you have should be peace. Ve'ata, and now. Shamati ki gozi zimlach. I've heard that they're shearing your sheep. Ata haro'im asher lecha hayu imanu. Now look, he says, the shepherds, your shepherds, were with us. Lo hechlamnu, we didn't shame them. V'lo nifkad lohem me'uma. They didn't lose anything. Kol yimehe osam ba'Karmel. All their time in the Carmel. Sha'alas ne'arecha v'yagidu lach. Ask your youths, and they will tell you. V'yimtzu'a ne'arim chen be'enecha. Let my youths find favor in your eyes. Show them favor. Ki al yom tov banu. Because we have come for the yom tov. I'm going to come back to that and explain that, obviously. Give now that which your hand can find for your servants and for your son David. That term son, which David used with Shaul, he's now using here as well, positioning himself as the inferior. So we have a lot to talk about here, and obviously we're only going to start it right now. But I wanted to begin by asking you, what does it say to you when he sends 10 youths? What does that look like to you? Yeah, Effie.
Shows that he has power, he has people behind him.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Sandy.
I feel it's more like a minyan or a quorum to have a witness that 10 people saw him be dissed or whatever, like dismissed.
Right, well that's, he didn't expect that, but yes. Yeah, Claudette.
It brings to mind the 10 spies that were sent.
Ooh, that's interesting. Right, they sent 12, right? There were 10 bad ones.
Yeah, 10 bad ones, yes, yes.
It's true that we call them an Eidah, testimony, and it comes from that group. Sandra?
I was just thinking that it was sort of like a mincha, like Yaakov sent people to Esav, and here he's sending, it's a sign of covenant.
Yeah, so two opposite ways you could read this. One, like Sandra just said, it's honor. This is a delegation of honor. You're going to see as we take a closer read of what David said that it really he's very formal and he's very etiquette conscious. So I would treat it as a delegation of honor. But I want to show you a Yerushalmi in Erevin, which reads it differently. We have 2 minutes left, so I think I might just sum it up. The Yerushalmi in source number 13 talks about the laws of a military camp. There are certain rules that are bent or even broken on behalf of a military camp. And one of those rules is that if they need wood, they can bring the wood from anywhere. They don't have to worry about whose wood it is. They can take it from anywhere. And the Gemara there asks, how many men constitutes a military camp? Right? At what point do you stop being a random soldier and you start being a military camp? And one answer there is 10. And it comes from our passage here. These 10. And it comes from a verse we didn't actually read yet. The sentence 9 is going to say, David's youths came and spoke to Nabal all the things in the name of David, Vayanuchu, and they halted. Which the Rishalmi here explains to mean they were choneh, they camped. They were like a military camp. What does that mean? They were like a military camp. So the Rav David Frankel, again, the Karbon HaEda commentary in source number 14, is that they were hinting to Naval, you know, a military camp can take whatever it wants. So I wonder if there isn't an element of intimidation in this. It doesn't really fit the psukim to call it intimidation, and I'm not sure that that's what the Gemara really wants to say. Nonetheless, it's certainly a very interesting thing that you send 10 men and the Yerushalmi uses that as the example of a military camp. I think that's fascinating. All right, there's much more to be said. God willing, we will pick up with this next Thursday. Be well.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbat.
Have a good Shabbat.